Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Brian Tokar. I'm really happy to be seeing you again, Brian, and your most recent book is Redesigning Life, The Worldwide Challenge to Genetic Engineering. Brian Tokar lives in Vermont, where he works with the Institute for Social Ecology. He's been an activist for a long time, doing incredible work since the 70s. He has other books. One is called Earth for Sale, and another one is Green Alternative. So we're going to be talking about your book, Redesigning Life, The Worldwide Challenge to Genetic Engineering, today. And it's a really a big, fat book with so much information in it, which is really important because this issue of genetic engineering is such an important one. And so many people in the United States, although I understand people in Europe have taken a stand about it, people in the United States don't seem to either know about it or get it when they do know about it. So tell us, Brian Tokar.
Yes, thanks. It's good to be with you here again at your wonderful place here in Berkeley. In my view, genetic engineering represents maybe the most serious long-term threat to the integrity of life on Earth. And it has been a very high-profile issue in most of the world, not only in Europe, but in all across Asia, from India through Southeast Asia, across to Japan, in Brazil, which is probably at this point the world's leading supplier of non-genetically engineered soybeans. And all the European countries and the Japanese and lots of other people are now buying their soybeans from Brazil instead of the U.S. Here in the U.S., we face the problem that the industry is largely based here. Three-quarters of the genetically engineered crops are grown here. No other country has more than a relatively small portion of its agriculture devoted to genetically engineered crops. Argentina is a somewhat close second, but all of the other countries are really, many are experimenting with it, but most are really keeping this technology at arm's length. The strategy of the industry here, as this technology was being developed, was to keep it out of the media.
Uh-huh. Okay, so now we know the United States has got more of this what you consider the biggest threat to life as we know it. Tell us a little bit about what it is, because I imagine that a lot of people don't even possibly know what we're talking about, genetic engineering, or they have misconceptions maybe.
Genetic engineering is a radical new technology that was developed in the 1970s when biologists first discovered that they could extract fragments of genetic material or DNA from living cells that were correlated with a particular biological function, and then inject that DNA into the chromosomes of often completely unrelated organisms. So it's the artificial transfer and exchange of genetic material across the species barrier, across the barriers that for millennia have divided living organisms from one another along species lines in order to protect the reproductive integrity of plants and animals and microorganisms alike.
So it's super going against nature, that's for sure. And this is how we can get the fish in our strawberries. Right?
Exactly. And since 1996, these genetically engineered organisms, basically crop plants that have genes inserted in them, mostly from bacteria, from other plants, and from viruses, which is very serious, and we can get into that in a little bit, have been grown on a commercial scale, have become part of our food supply, especially in the United States, where half the soybeans grown here last year were genetically engineered, and a quarter of the field corn, and about a third of the canola, rapeseed, and cotton. All estimates converge on the figure of between 60% and 70% of all processed foods containing genetically engineered ingredients, because almost everything has some soy or corn product in it, or it has canola oil, or a lot of companies use cottonseed oil, even though it's full of pesticides in addition to being genetically engineered, to save money. You know, even restaurants sometimes fry in cottonseed oil. These are the four basic crops that this technology has affected the supply of. The seriousness of contamination came home last fall when it was discovered that a variety of genetically engineered corn, this is a corn that has bacterial genes in it, so that it can secrete a bacterial pesticide that's lethal to various organisms that are considered pests by monoculture growers of corn.
Yeah, I always figure if these things, they kill other living things, they can't be too good for humans either.
That's right. And we know that this same bacterial toxin, the same pollen from the so-called BT corn, kills monarch butterfly caterpillars at a phenomenal rate. We know it's lethal to many beneficial insects that farmers depend on as natural pest controls, ladybugs and lacewings and things like that. We know it can affect the behavior of honeybees. There are some experiments suggesting that very strongly. We know it can accumulate in the soil and survive in the soil from the end of one growing season to the beginning of the next. And there are now 5 or 6 different varieties of this in much of the corn and canola and cotton that's grown commercially. In addition to that, there's a particular variety of genetically engineered corn that's even more dangerous because it has many molecular qualities in common with proteins that cause severe allergies in people. Mm-hmm. And this particular variety of corn has never been approved for human consumption. The EPA allowed companies to sell the seed to farmers to grow for animal feed. But in most cases, the farmers were never told. So it's made its way into the human food supply. And last year, in the fall of 2000, about 300 name brand products containing corn needed to be pulled from the shelves because they were found to be contaminated with this particular variety of pesticidal corn that was also likely a severe allergen.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about somebody I was just speaking to just earlier today about these kinds of things, a well-educated person who said, these studies aren't conclusive and it's controversial. Do you think that's true, Brian?
Well, the reality is that there are hardly any conclusive studies. There are hardly any studies, particularly on the health effects. We've had 25 years of research, very narrowly focused on getting these products to market as fast as possible. In the last 10 years, we've had a little bit of research on the environmental effects, and almost every new study that's come out has confirmed what the opponents have been saying all along, going back to the 1980s. When these products were first being developed. The studies on human health, you can count them on the fingers of one hand. The reality is the research isn't being done. Nobody has the funding to really determine one way or another what affects these organisms with combinations of traits that have never existed in nature before, most likely, what effect they have on our health. The circumstantial evidence and the preliminary evidence from animal testing is extremely frightening. We know that allergic properties can pass along from one food to another. They did something relatively straightforward, one of the few experiments in this whole field that's unambiguous, that was done in the mid-90s. Where a company wanted to change the nutritional composition of soybeans by adding genes from Brazil nuts. And they know a lot of people are allergic to Brazil nuts. So the experiment was to see what would happen if blood serum from people who were allergic to Brazil nuts were tested with these genetically engineered soybeans, and lo and behold, they got a very strong immune reaction in the laboratory. So we know that the allergy problem is real. The biotech people say, you can't get allergies from food. All the proteins are digested in the human digestive system. And that's simply not true. We all know people who get serious allergies, for some people, very severe and life-threatening allergic reactions from food. We also know there's a problem with antibiotic resistance. Genetic engineering is still a very low probability exercise in the laboratory. And to find the one out of a million cells that actually took in the foreign DNA into their chromosomes and are actually able to express whether it's the bacterial toxin or a gene product from some other organism. And you mentioned the fish and the strawberries. This is an experiment that was done in the early 90s to try to make strawberries more frost resistant by incorporating flounder genes. Lucky for us and for the Earth, it's an experiment that actually didn't work very well. So they've never tried to commercialize that product. But what they are doing is pretty outrageous. So we know there's a problem with antibiotic resistance because they use antibiotics and antibiotic resistance genes in order to find the successful genetic engineering experiments. And everybody from the British to the Canadian medical associations have said, look, we already have a huge problem with antibiotic resistance and antibiotic resistant pathogens these days. This practice of the biotech industry is going to potentially make that a lot worse, and it needs to stop, yet they're still doing it. We also know from the work of a scientist who's a household name in Europe. He's been on the front pages for years. Originally from Hungary, worked in a lab in Scotland, was commissioned to do some research. His name is Arpad Pushtai. Some listeners might have heard of him. He was commissioned to do research on a new variety of genetically engineered potato that hasn't been marketed yet, but that had toxin gene from particular varieties of plants. And the idea is that it would secrete a plant toxin to suppress the growth of weeds. And when he fed those genetically engineered potatoes to his laboratory mice, there were dramatic changes in the development of these animals. Most of their vital organs were drastically reduced in size and weight. They had smaller hearts and kidneys and spleens and brains. They had enlarged endocrine glands. Many of their endocrine glands were enlarged. They found severe irritation of the digestive system. They found highly elevated immune responses. The latter two findings were conclusive enough to be published in the peer-reviewed scientific literature. The data on organ development was still preliminary, was still underway, at a time when Pushtai did an interview with the BBC in England and mentioned that he had some really disturbing findings in his laboratory in this interview. He just kind of mentioned it in passing. The next day, he lost his job. He was locked out of his laboratory. He was unable to continue this work to find out why he was seeing these bizarre deformities emerging from animals having been fed genetically engineered potatoes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even from the plant toxin that the potatoes were engineered to produce, because when you sprayed potatoes with the same plant toxin, there was no effect at all. So this was a careful, controlled experiment, even though the data is relatively preliminary. Mm-hmm. Various people in Europe are now trying to follow this up. But anybody who says we have conclusive evidence that genetically engineered food is not harmful to our health, I want to see that evidence, because nobody in the world has seen that evidence.
So it's not really, they're not even really arguing about it. It's more that it's not there. I mean, there seem to be two issues here, as in so many things these days. So there's the issue of the genetically engineered food itself, and we're just talking about food here so far. And that's not all that's genetically engineered these days, but right now we're focusing on food. And then what happens to somebody who does a test I mean, that's amazing, folks. Get that? He lost his job as soon as he came out with evidence that this was not good. And you said at the very beginning of the interview, Brian Topekar, that it was important to keep the fact that genetic engineering was happening at all out of the media. So that's three layers we have there to be concerned about.
Yeah. The industry's strategy from the beginning was to go to the press and say, there's no legitimate controversy here, there's no point in covering it. And the U.S. media, for the most part, bought that until around 1999, when the Monarch Butterfly story came out, and then we had some of the first large demonstrations at the annual gatherings of the Biotechnology Industry Organization. There's another one coming up in San Diego next week, which might already have happened by the time most people get to hear this. And then the Starlink corn, the banned corn that made its way into products that had to be recalled. So the media can no longer ignore it. Now they're being told there's no problem, people are exaggerating, we have the facts in and it's safe, which they have no evidence to support. The other thing they're saying, which is extremely insidious, is it's too late. Everything is so contaminated that there's nothing we can do about it. The genie is out of the bottle and it's just all over. We win. And that propaganda line was the focus of, for example, a front page article in the New York Times just this past Sunday. So the media is once again working in lockstep with corporations. In this case, companies with roots in the chemical industry, same companies responsible for all of the major chemical disasters of really the last generation or two. These companies have been merging. These companies have been buying up all of the major commercial seed companies in the world. So most of the commercial seed companies that large-scale growers buy their seeds from are now owned by chemical companies with high stakes in biotechnology. And these companies are playing the same game in terms of exercising their influence at the highest levels of the government and in the media to suppress dissenting voices.
Well, let's say the names of these companies, please.
We're talking about people like Monsanto, the company that, of course, was responsible for most of the PCB contamination from the mid-1930s on to the early 70s. We're talking about Aventis, which was formed from the merger of one of the biggest chemical companies in Germany, Hoechst, and the biggest chemical company in France, Ron Palanc. We're talking about Novartis, which was formed from the merger of Ciba-Geigy and Sandoz, both companies with long histories of chemical contamination, producing products that have seriously impaired the lives and health of people all over the world.
And these products now are called food that you kind of get in the grocery store.
Yeah, I mean, the world's largest seed company, Pioneer Hybrid, is now wholly owned by DuPont Chemical. And this all happened over about a two-year period in the late 1990s until the opposition to genetically engineered food became so vocal and so prominent, especially all across Europe, that investors started scratching their heads and asking if they really wanted their money wrapped up in this enterprise. Mm-hmm. And in the last year or so, there have been actually some fairly high-profile divestments of agrochemical and seed divisions by some of these big companies because they're also heavily involved in pharmaceuticals, of course, trying to make genetic engineering the only approved research method in all of the biomedical sciences. And this technology is also what's driven the outrageous wave of mergers in the pharmaceutical industry over the last couple of years. But because of the controversy around GE Foods, companies seeking to protect their profits in pharmaceuticals, and pharmaceuticals for the last many years have been overwhelmingly the single most profitable industry in the United States. Mm-hmm. Every year, the Fortune 500 comes out and they assess companies for many different parameters, and one of them is profitability. Pharmaceuticals always come out number one. So when we attack the biotech industry, we're talking about genetically engineered foods, we're talking about the control over the future of healthcare. We're talking about the misdirection of medical research toward a narrow genetic determinism that makes it hard to even study the environmental causes of disease. And we're talking about a whole new generation of genetic interventions on the horizon, like the cloning of humans and the creation of so-called designer babies, what they call euphemistically germline genetic modification, really highly speculative experiments in the genetic engineering of humans, which are also being done by a lot of these same companies. And in my book, Redesigning Life, what I try to do, it's broken down into four parts. It contains the writing of about 25 experts from all over the world. The first section really goes into the whole range of issues around food and health that have been in the headlines a lot around the world. The second section looks at human genetics and human health, and how the biotechnology industry has distorted the agenda in medical research. The third part looks at many of the international issues that have been of major concern, things like the patenting of life, a phenomenon originated once again here in the U.S., and which the U.S. has been using international agencies like the WTO to try to force down the throats of other countries all over the world.
The WTO is a World Trade Organization. I just have to translate the initials here.
Certainly. Also the phenomenon of biopiracy, where these companies have been traveling around the world trying to appropriate indigenous knowledge about medicinal plants, even take blood samples from indigenous people that they can patent and look for unique genetic markers that further their research. And they claim it's all in the interests of medical benefits for humanity as a whole, but the reality is the material becomes the proprietary property of these companies. They get a patent, and in many cases that have been well documented by Vandana Shiva and others, people have been deprived of the right to even continue using natural products from their own environment that have been part of their culture for many years. The last part of the book goes into the development of the movement against biotechnology in countries all over the world, and it's full of really some amazing stories. I give the history of opposition to biotechnology in the U.S., which really goes back to the very beginnings of this technology in the 1970s, when people were trying to stop universities from building containment labs, through the 80s, when the first outdoor field tests happened of genetically engineered organisms, and it was a huge issue here in California at the time where some of the first field tests happened, on to the controversies around various genetically engineered foods. Then we have Jim Thomas from England telling the amazing story of the development of the movement there against genetic engineering. Lucy Sherratt from Canada writing about how Canada succeeded in banning the use of genetically engineered bovine growth hormone for dairy cows.
That's what you get a look out for in milk.
That's right. That was really the first GE product to really become a major factor in the food supply, and it's very dangerous.
So we got to get organic milk whenever possible.
Yes, absolutely. And there are several accounts from Europe. Vandana Shiva tells the amazing story of the beginnings of the farmers' movement in India, where more recently there have been up to 1 million farmers demonstrating against the corporate control over seeds and the patenting of life, things that we think of as abstractions, but for cultures where the seed represents the continuity of people's connections to the land, this is an outrageous phenomenon, and people are rising up all over the world against it.
And they're just about to rise up in San Diego. I want you to say a few more words, Brian Tokar. And Tokar is spelled T-O-K-A-R. And I just want to say that this book, Redesigning Life, the worldwide challenge to genetic engineering, is very comprehensive. And because I just really urge folks to get it, because it's really important. I mean, it affects all of us. Nobody gets out of this. I myself try to eat organic food and drink organic milk, and that's it. I hardly even want to go to a restaurant anymore, because which I used to do a lot for all the obvious nice reasons to go to restaurants. But I can really just feel the difference in the food. And I'd be glad to hear that Americans are going to finally rise up, because they've certainly been so slow to. Tell us a little bit about what you expect to see in San Diego.
We're having a huge day and a half teach-in with lots of international guests. We're going to have a march and a rally down to the San Diego Convention Center, and then 3 days of affinity group-based direct actions to try to highlight all the various dangers of genetic engineering. If people want to find out more about this growing movement, there are a number of websites. One is the website for this series of actions at the industry conferences, which have gone under the umbrella name of Biodevastation. So the website is www.biodev.org. Where I live in Vermont, we've been pulling together an amazing regional network of activists called Northeast Resistance Against Genetic Engineering, and there are similar networks in the Midwest and the South and a few other parts of the country. You can tap into that network by logging on to www.nerage.org. There's also a lot of information at our organization's website, which is www.social-ecology.org for the Institute for Social Ecology.
And I'm sure all these must be linked to other web pages that organize people in other countries and all that sort of thing, so that's really good to have. Well, I want to thank you so much, Brian Tokar, for your time here. Get his book, Redesigning Life: The Worldwide Challenge to Genetic Engineering, edited by Brian Tokar, T-O-K-A-R, who has been my guest. Thanks again, Brian.
Thank you, Sue.
And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.